basically, CanAssist is an organization that is essentially there to provide services, support for people with special needs. And really, it's about empowerment. And it's about giving people the opportunity to participate in society. And we're sort of unusual in that we are very much a service-based organization. We see ourselves primarily as providing service, but at the same time, utilizing the extraordinary sort of educational and research facilities at the university. But we're certainly quite unique in that respect, that service is our primary objective. And essentially, what we do is we harness and utilize extraordinary resources within the university and within the greater community to deliver that service. And so this is sort of an example of some of the extraordinary resources that we can utilize. So there's staff and faculty on campus, so there's staff in the machine shops, in the electrical engineering workshops, etc., who provide services. So we use some of the extraordinary physical facilities and human resources on campus. And of course, we've got, of course, an enormous number of faculty from a huge range of disciplines, whether it's music, whether it's mathematics, engineering, computer science, psychology, biology. When they're needed, we will engage them. And so there's, as you can imagine, extraordinary expertise that we can draw upon. And then, of course, in the greater community, wonderful resources we can draw upon too. Retired engineers, retired machinists, retired physicians, seamstresses. All those people have an enormous amount of money to contribute to that program. It's very important for us to outreach to the community and to engage those in the community for the service that we want to provide, the resource we want to provide to the disability community. And of course, there's one other fantastic group that we can draw upon, and that's students. Thousands of students. And so, you know, I like to joke it's great because it's free labor. Some of them we actually pay. We engage grad students and graduate students, and they do demand to be paid and fed. But nonetheless, there are just thousands of really energetic, passionate students we can draw upon, and it's a fantastic resource for us. And so we'll engage students as co-op students, as graduate students, as volunteers for our whole range of programs. So we'll have students from physical education, from biology, that's where you came from, I guess, originally, so we can go down to those depths. Medicine, you name it, we'll bring in students. So we've had close to 4,000 students engaged in our program since we started. And there's another really, really important component of having students engaged, and that is that when they've touched our program, engaged in our program, their knowledge of disability issues is increased. And so the hope, the expectation is that when these students graduate and go out into the big world, they're the leaders of society, and they're going to be the ones who are going to be championing inclusion. And if we really want social change, it's really through those people. So they're going to be the employers who begin to think more about taking on people with disabilities, or changing the conditions for people with disabilities, and promoting inclusion. So it's really important for us, the more students that we can engage and touch while they're at UVic and other universities too, that's a huge thing for us. So promoting inclusion is a key thing, as well as providing what we hope is a really important service to the community. So we were established way back in 1999 as purely a volunteer organization. It was just myself, actually, and one other technician in my lab. And since then, we've grown. And we really pride ourselves in having a team that essentially always will exceed expectations. A very diversified team, interdisciplinary team, and passionate about providing an excellent service for the community. And since that time, we've developed a huge number of services. We've helped provide direct support to literally hundreds of people with special needs. And we've developed about 150 what we call model technologies over that period. So I'll talk about some of those. But there's another really important part of our program, and that goes beyond technology. And so Shayla will be talking a little bit about a program that we have the equal teamwork. And that is an incredibly important program to us. And what it says, what we're trying to do is essentially meet a need that's unmet. So we've developed technologies for a set that aren't available in the workplace. And the same with some of our services. So one of the services that we have is a teamwork program. This is essentially directed at teenagers with special needs, helping them find supportive employment. Just like any teenager, they want job opportunities. They want the experience, they want the pride, and they want the money too. And so why not give them that opportunity to get that experience, to get that confidence, to get that pride, to be working out in the community. So, and it's an incredibly important milestone on their development, to give them those opportunities so that they've got the confidence when they graduate from school, and a lot of these support programs have disappeared, they've got the opportunity to go out there and work. Yes? Well, I think it's incredibly successful. I mean, I should be, modest. Success to me is, the pride of a child or an individual getting a job, or my daughter, or any other child, and also the pride of the family and the employers. And I think, Shayla, do you want to speak to that?
It's been very successful. Teamwork is still in a pilot project phase, so it's been around for about 2 years. It started quite small scale with about 4 youth in the program, and over the years it expanded up to 8 youth, and part of what Teamwork does is really focuses on the transition out of high school into adult services and adult world. And so what our goal is to find a youth paid part-time work while they're in high school, and then we'll support them to transition to adult employment services, and they'll keep that job. It's not, related just to us, it's related to the youth, of course. So it's been really successful, and we just brought on 4 more new youth, and so we're getting that started, and we're really excited.
I don't know if you even wanted to tell the story of Steve in terms of how he's boosted self-confidence and how he's developed and grown since joining that program.
So we've got lots of success stories in Teamwork, and one of them is related. So we work with youth 15 to 19 years old who are attending high school. There's not really any services like that in the community or really anywhere else that you can find provincially or nationally. So we are supporting the youth while they're attending school. But when the program started, we were still developing and defining what Teamwork was going to do and how they were going to do it. So Steve actually started in a program. He was already graduated from high school and had been working with another supported employment agency in the community and wasn't getting any work. So they came to Teamwork and said, "Can you help us?" And yes, absolutely. And Steve had never had paid work before. He'd never rid public transit on his own before. And he was really eager, but a little bit shy about a couple aspects of work and transportation. And so Tara, who was the previous coordinator, worked with him, and he loved sports, and like any young man would. And Tara found him a position at Pacific Institute for Sports Excellence, which is out at Hamilton Interurban, and it really has been a fantastic fit. He's still there. He's been there for about a year and a half now, and it was actually the first time for these employers to have somebody with special needs working in their institute, and it's a huge facility. If anybody's been out there, and it's young staff, and it's exactly where somebody even want to be in their early 20s. And he started with full support, so we were providing one-on-one job coaching for him, and he is so independent now. I mean, we just check in once a month with him, make a phone call every now and then, how's it going? But some of his other successes were taking the bus on his own. That's a big step for independence, is not being reliant on your parents or friends or family to get around. And he is completely independent in that regard now, too, with bus training with his job coach. So. And he's transitioned now, too. So do you want to?
And I think a very important point is expectations. His expectations were quite low, and it was probably his family expectations. So it's wonderful to see that growth in confidence and in their expectation. You know what? People do it. So that, to me, that's a success. success. We wish we had more money so that we could you know, develop the program. We estimate that there was probably about 400 children, teenagers in Victoria alone. But we're confident the college has been very successful and hope we can extend that actually nationally. Yes. For cancers as a whole, or this theme work? Did you want to?
So referrals can really come from anybody. Self-identification, team can contact us directly. We get most of our referrals from teachers. So we're not, because we're not part of the school district per se, we're not affiliated in that way, but I go out and I talk to the teachers of the special education program, and they have, you know, lots of ideas of youth that would be a good fit for us, so we get a lot of referrals from them. Parents contact us directly, so, and we can get them from anybody, any professionals, or we're not just a one group. We're trying to really fill the gap for youth who are in high school still. So most of the youth that we've brought on now are about 16 years old. So we're going to work with them for a couple years. It's not a really quick process. It does take some time in the beginning to get to know the youth, their interests, their abilities, their strengths, their challenges. And then finding an employer is it's a struggle for us and for any of the other supportive community. The education component that goes into it, of course, is people here can fill in.
And so you link them to the adult services?
So when they're 19 and graduated from high school, we're working with them and their family and adult employment agencies to transition our support to the adult agencies. So for a really smooth transition, because also for employers, you know, they've been working with you for a year or two, and, you're going, and, now what's going to happen? So there's a lot of communication that goes on to ensure really smooth handoff.
And again, the feedback we've got from the agencies that work with the adults, the young adults, has been really positive, and they've had incredibly well prepared individuals. So that's very, very, very satisfying. So we'll move on, thank you. And again, it's great. More questions, we have another program that I'm particularly proud about. It's called Just for Kids. That's been running for 11 years, and we've had hundreds of kids engaged in that. And that is really, it's a wonderful thing where essentially it's a program for children with disabilities and adults. We've actually, I shouldn't even say children, because part of the 11 years ago, Joanna, for example, joined the program. She was, I think, 15 at the time. She's 30. And so we have, I think, our youngest player is around about 6, and our oldest is Joanna. So, and bringing these children together every Sunday afternoon to play soccer. And it's beautiful to watch them because they are so open. And they're so, I never heard one child complain about another child holding the ball, or this, that, and other. If someone scores and it's the wrong goal, everyone cheers. It's a beautifully, beautifully inclusive program. And we have what we call soccer buddies. We play alongside the kids, making sure that they get the ball, they share the ball appropriately, and it's wonderful. So we've got the former goalkeeper for the bikes team who plays with us, and he's always conceding goals against the players, and they love that. We've got a former national team player, Canadian national team player, and again, he's always been proud of the kids. And so it's a really beautiful program, and they have, it shows that they have a lot to teach us about inclusion, because they are totally inclusive in between. So this has been going for about 11 years. I should just briefly just tell you about how we're funded and what our goals are. A goal is essentially to be completely self-sustaining, and that's a challenge. We've received very good funding from the provincial government in getting us going and giving us money to essentially get to the point where we are self-sustainable. But we realise that we can't rely on government whether it's provincial or federal government IGS, that we have to diversify our revenue sources. And so there are a number of routes that we're taking. One is service contracts. So we're doing a large number of service contracts with agencies such as WOTS, APC. We're starting to do service contracts with the Parliament now with the Department of National Defense and Veteran Affairs. And so we're looking to expand that to agencies such as ICBC, so that those can generate revenues from those services. Obviously, philanthropic donations are incredibly important, so we get funding from organizations such as the Vancouver Foundation, the Ford Foundation. So we're very aggressive in going after a wide range of philanthropic organizations. And of course, there's philanthropy for individuals. Again, we're very fortunate to receive some wonderful support from individuals, both from the Victoria community and beyond. So that's a very important area for us. And the other area is commercialization. It takes a while, but it turns out that some of the technologies that we've developed have broader applications. So we have now licensing agreements with some assistive technology companies. So those technologies get out into the market, they generate revenues, which can support the program as a whole. I should say that when any individual comes to us, or any family, we don't charge for our services, so we need to generate those revenues to support these people. And of course, we have wonderful support from the university in terms of our space, the facility, they pay my salary, I should say that construction will start in a few months on a fantastic new facility that will be housed in something called the Center for Athletics, Recreation, and Special Abilities. So this will be a brand new athletics facility which will have campuses front and center, which will be quite fantastic. So that says a lot for inclusion and accessibility. So I'm going to talk a little bit about some of the technologies and the devices that we produce. And so people that we work with. So we work right across the disability spectrum and the age spectrum. So our youngest client, I think, is being about 4 months old. And our eldest, I think when we started with her, she was 93. She's now 96. So huge age, huge spectrum of age. And again, right across the disability spectrum. So we work with people who have physical challenges, those with very severe cognitive challenges, right across the spectrum or a combination of the two. So we tend not to look at the disability itself, but we look at the task and the need and the requirement. So we don't really focus on the disability. And what it's all about is essentially improving people's quality of life, improving their independence, and giving them the opportunity to become to participate in society and to promote inclusion. And so that technology might be related to communication, it might be related to mobility, it could be recreational in nature, something to do with leisure, work, or basic daily living. And I'll illustrate that with some examples. So right across the spectrum of use. And our requests. Everything we do is in response to requests. So we will request-driven organization. And so those requests can come from individuals, they can come from families, they can come from agencies, it could be the Freelance Center for Children's Health, Sangamon Hospital, it could be from the Department of National Defense, or from individuals and families. And again, as I said, any request that comes from an individual or family, whether it's in Prince George, or whether it's in Victoria, or Ontario, we don't charge for services. So everything is done free of charge. And again, the technologies and the solutions range from something very simple. I don't know what would be the shortest project you've ever done for us. 3 days. What was that? You're not very good. Anyway, a 3-day project, right through the things that have taken years. Nathaniel, you've been working on a project that's, I don't know how many years, I think we...
We just... Yeah,
3 to 5 years. Again, we'll work with clients, and I'll talk about that a little bit later. So some clients with very acute needs, we stay with them and work with them over years and years and years. So some very complex solutions and some very, very simple ones that we've resolved in a few days, which is nice. So as I said, it's about quality of life. It's about doing things, enabling things, people to do things that we often just take for granted. This young girl, she has some acute physical challenges. And we first did a project with her, how many years ago with Darcy? This is Grace.
This project, 2 years ago.
About 2 years with this Special Education Technology BC. And she and 9 other children received a really beautiful system, essentially allowed them to be rodent reporters. So some of these children had cerebral palsy, were unable to use the very minute buttons, etc., on video cameras. So Darcy and his team put together this beautiful system, big, large buttons, so they could control the camera and engage and be sort of rodent reporters at the school. And Grace was one of those recipients of these devices. And I remember talking to her after the presentation, so I said, well, is there anything else that we can do for you? And she said, well, I'd love to be able to brush my hair. Because she'd never been able to brush her hair before. Always had to be mom or dad or caregiver. And she wanted to be able to wash her face by herself. She wanted to be able to eat the sand by herself without someone holding that sand in her face. And so Darcy and his very skilled team of mechanical engineers came up with a whole series of solutions for her, and this is just the device that will allow her to brush her hair. Things that we take for granted. And I was actually thinking, you know, next time I give a talk, I think I'm going to call it How I Loved to Love, you know, How I Learned to Love Mowing the Lawn. Because we had a recent project with a young man. Now, how old is he?
He's in late 40s.
I say young, but it's late 40s, and he had some brain damage.
He had a stroke.
And as a result of that stroke, there was some acute physical challenge. He was unable to mow the lawn. But that was something really important for him because, you know, as a man, he felt, you know, I've got to be able to do these things to make that contribution. And so, again, the team modified an electric lawnmower, one that would allow him to mow the lawn. And when we delivered this device to this man, he was in tears. And because, you know, he's able to do something that he really wanted to do. And I thought to myself, you know, I grumble every time I go that down there. And maybe I shouldn't do that anymore because I just take that for granted. So rather than grumbling, I should be saying to myself how lucky I am. So it's all about that empowerment and giving people that sense of freedom and independence. So the starting point for every individual with whom we work is not the technology that is actually what we need. What do they need to do? What do they want to do? So this little fella, he has cerebral palsy, Elijah, and he wants to play music by himself. He's not able to use an iPhone. He doesn't have the dexterity to use an iPhone. So we developed a solution for this young boy to label him. And we'll talk about that a little bit later. The other really important part of the just ask for feature in the world of this podcast, another really important component of the program is that the client, and sometimes we don't really like to use the word client, sometimes we use the term co-developer, but that the person with whom we work is then part of the team. And it's really important to make sure that whatever solution you devise is something that is actually needed and that's useful. And it's not our idea of what they need, but actually what they really need for themselves. And so we always try and engage, the individual and their caregivers. So you have to look at the total environment. I'm sure we'll talk about this later. The resources that are in place, the supports that are in place, and consult with as many people as widely as possible. So that the device that is made isn't put on the shelf, is actually needed. So it's absolutely important to build that team around that individual. And I should say, sometimes it can be very sad. We work with people, for example, with ALS. And I remember a case a few years ago, a young lady had very advanced ALS. And she knew the solution that we had to develop for her. She wouldn't see it because she was too bad before that. But indeed she did. And she took tremendous pride in the fact that what we were doing to help her was going to help others. So they are very much part of that team. The other thing that's very interesting is that all our solutions are highly individualized and customized, but often they'll have broader applications, and they'll go beyond that particular individual. And this is a case in point. This is a work that's been done for a young man, again, who has brain damage. And he has tremendous difficulty organizing and memorizing his tasks. And so we've written a number of applications that actually fit on an iPhone. iPod that will essentially allow him to record videos, look at the steps that it might take to make coffee, that he has to put water, the sort of sequence of events, to record things and play them back later so he's reminded of the things that he's done during the day, and to share those with his friends and support friends. But it turns out, of course, that a tool like this is extraordinarily useful for people with dementia. So what we're finding is that some of these solutions have much broader applications. And the other thing that's sort of interesting is that the technologies that we develop have wide applications. So this is a young, incredibly talented young man, Ari, who has spinal muscular atrophy. And has, as you can imagine, a very, very limited motion. And so we've developed a system, we can't see it very well, but it's actually sitting between his legs. This is actually a position and motion sensor. It's a wireless sensor. And essentially, by moving his legs, he can essentially adjust the position of that sensor and develop notes, and play music. He's an incredibly talented composer. So through the system, he generates music. But the same system is used in a myriad of other applications. You can tie a number of these things together and strap them to the legs, to a subject's legs, and you can get a measure of gait. So we're very interested in using this and assessing gait of individuals with Parkinson's disease, looking at the efficacy of their medication, seeing how the disease might be progressing. And so very wide application. So that's always very satisfying for us. And again, we're building up enormous expertise in various areas of these technologies. The other thing that's very important is it's a highly iterative process. And maybe I'll have Darcy just talk about what happened here, and the background behind this this project.
Another year ago, actually, every year we work with one of the mechanical engineering design classes and trying to incorporate one into our design. And a few years ago, we were having our Christmas party downtown for the past 4 years, and one of the fellows who worked for us, Dan Spelt, at CP, we were all playing pool, but of course, he couldn't pick up the pool being in the US, so he's in a wheelchair as well. And so we told him one day that we're going to make something so he can't play pool. And there was an idea there, and so in the following year, when we were working with the design class again, we proposed that as one of the main projects. Come up with a way, such a design that would allow someone in a wheelchair who really only has control of their head to play pool. And so that was their first attempt, that wooden structure. It looks very crude, but it was actually very, very innovative and gave us a lot of good ideas as to how to build something from that. And then about 8 months later, we had four German students who were exchanging for a year of engineering, two electrical and mechanical engineers. And so we took them on as part of their course department and got them to further the design. So then working along with mechanical engineers, we made that by fully automated with metal frame and whatnot.
Oh,
you got it there. Yeah. It's fully automated. Attach on any wheelchair and whatnot, and now just using two buttons on his head, he can move that arm out and left and right, and there's a mechanical head on the bottom, which then shoots a little cue, projectile about 3 inches to fire the ball. Right, so now he can do all of that on his own. And it all started about 3 years ago with an initial idea.
And you can see there's a cylinder here of compressed CO2 that powers the laser, the queue. There's a laser sighting system too, so it's pretty sophisticated. Luke, did you want to sort of talk about how something like that might help you?
Yeah, and so. So the dual key one, when I found out the design of it, it just blew my mind because it depends on, as my disability progressed throughout my life, there's certain things I design myself that I'll never be able to do. And as I get under the list of different improvement. And so here's an example where something
Yes.
And that's a very practical question. Has he had any trouble taking that in like a pool hall?
We actually haven't done that yet.
No.
We just finished it early January and we still have it in our lab and testing it and whatnot. So we're hoping to get them up there and try it out.
But what I should say is the pool hall peacocks are really interesting. They've actually got to sort of simply bring it down. They've got their resident pool expert. Help us, but they're really excited about testing. So we're very excited. We get better at what we do. We've been going now for 9 or 10 years, but when we started, I'm not saying we were amateurs, we were maybe, let's say, we were more enthusiastic, we were driven by passion. But we realized, and that's why we have full time staff, that you're dealing with really important things. You've got to have a really, really good product. And it's got to look really good. Not to say that the other things weren't important, but we're always striving to get better. And this is an example of a project that was really successful. This is Shannon. She is in Vancouver. And this was an early project for her. And what it is you can just see on the side of her head there, there's a big box. And it contains two devices. It contains an infrared sensor and a laser pointer. And the idea is, and you can't see it, but on the other side of the ear horn, there's a box, a target that detects the output of this laser pointer, just the same way that I'm pointing at Shannon's head there. So she learned to hit that target. When she hit the target, Eeyore becomes animated. Eeyore sings songs, and his ears flat. He's a beautiful toy. But you can see it's a kind of a cumbersome device, and it's big. I don't think people know what it does. No, that might be me, actually, but I don't know. But anyway, it could look a lot better. So that's the sort of thing that we've evolved in. And actually, this was done a few years ago. But essentially, that same laser device now is way smaller and sleeker. It sits on the side of this headband. And just look at how beautifully this target, so that's the target, that's embedded in the circle. And again, that's how we can utilize some of these wonderful volunteers in the community. This was put together for us by a seamstress. And that's an interesting story. This was developed for a young man, Alex, who had brain, severe brain injury after a car accident in Vancouver. And he was going through rehab at Sunny Hill Hospital last year to help. His favorite toy was SpongeBob. Perhaps to be my least favorite toy. I don't know how many of you know SpongeBob. He's an incredibly annoying character. But Alex loved it, and that's all that counted. So when Alex puts on his headband, and he points his little the laser pointer at this target, SpongeBob becomes animated and starts singing. So it drove everyone in the lab crazy as we were doing it, because SpongeBob was singing all the time. But nonetheless, it was fantastic for Alex, and I was very privileged to be there the first time he used it. And you should have seen his face when he actually activated his mind. And that was an incredibly important first step in his rehabilitation, because it taught him that by moving his head, he could actually get a response and get a reaction. Since then, he's progressing, he's using a lot more sophisticated types of devices. But again, it shows how it's so important to customize a particular technology and allow that to be used. Yes? We've been quite aggressive in terms of doing it. It's such a specialized thing that it's unlikely that, you know, Toys R Us, and they, you know, occasionally we'll try to get a donation from, I mean, I think SpongeBob might have come from Toys R Us, but I think it'd be very hard to engage them, unfortunately, in that type of culture, because they're looking at the big market. We're always pushing it, absolutely. this project speaks for itself. A few liability issues here. I'm not sure how many dogs have been killed. So this is our indoor version, this is quite beautiful. So this is a much smaller dog, as you can see. So he can't fit the great big huge tennis balls. There's a little chute. There's a little chute hopper here that holds the balls. And the balls come out. This, I'm not sure what the velocity range is, but
they've got 10-15 feet.
Yeah. Comes out of the front here. And there's one other really neat feature of this device. And that's on the back there. Anyone got any idea what this device might be sort of sitting behind the wall?
Again, very good.
Yeah.
Question? How do they get the ball off the ground?
That's a good question. I'll answer that question. The first question is, that is a treat dispenser. So the treats in here, so this is like a little girl. She can dispense treats. Now, I understand the problem with this is the dog just more interested in the treats than in the ball.
Yeah, the first time we delivered it, the dog went crazy. He went to chase the ball, came back, did it again. He got a treat for it, stood there, got it, shot a ball, it was still standing there. He would not get a ball anymore, so we had to retake that one.
By the way, she launches this thing, she's using a head switch, is that right, Garcia? So there's a head switch mounted on the side of her wheelchair. Sorry, the head rest. So she's using her head to activate this launcher. The practical question is that what we're trying to do is train the dog to retrieve the ball and put it on the lap or whatever. But the other thing is, because this is how many goals would this accomplish?
Six?
Four. So in other words, in that case, you've got these four goals and maybe you're guiding. But what we try and do is absolutely try and get as much in here as possible. And suddenly, often users get the dogs or train the dogs. Retrieve the dog, put it in the map or whatever. So make it easier for them to do things.
Okay.
That's a good question. So here we come back to Elijah. And there's another thing I want to point out. He's wearing his favorite color, Lululemon headband. And in that Lululemon headband are some sensors that detect muscle signals. And so by actually clenching his jaw or by wriggling his forehead, using those muscles in his forehead, he can activate a device here, which is called an electromyographic unit that essentially operates or controls an iPhone. So he can change the track, he can adjust the volume, he can have as much control on the iPhone as the iPad by just using his four keys. So when we delivered about 225 units of these adapted iPods to children across the pond, it illustrates how we go about this. We managed to get funding for Guwahati that allow us to provide these technologies to these children. And this is one device that actually we don't do out of the iPod. So we hope through the licensing of that technology that will become widely available. And the other nice thing is that we're doing a similar thing to the iPad, so that an iPad can become fully switch accessible. And that is an incredibly exciting device because it's a mainstream device. And it's cool to use one. And these kids want to be cool. As I mentioned, well, there we are. You've aged since then.
A little bit. It's grad school.
There we are. So did you want to talk briefly? The point that I just really want to make is that long-term commitment to clients. So Agile, I think, has been in the program, I think, for 4 or 5 years. Did you want to just briefly explain what
sure.
we're doing here?
I'm not sure how familiar you all are with eye tracking technology, but typically an eye tracking solution, a commercial eye tracking solution, is very precise, but it gains its precision by having the user perform a calibration routine. So you look at a dot here, you look at a dot here, and here, and here, and maybe there's between 16 and 25 dots that you have to look at, and you get a very precise eye tracking system afterwards. Also very costly, but you get a good product. But for people who have severe cognitive impairments, you can't really expect them necessarily to be able to understand the significance of following a dot along 16 places on a screen, especially if you're not even sure what level of cognition they have. So you know that they're cognitively impaired, you know that it's profound, but you have no idea what's actually happening in their mind. And such is the case with people that have something called Rett syndrome. So we've developed this eye tracker that's sort of the equivalent of plug and play, if you like. It doesn't require any calibration. You can just sit down, and as long as your eyes are in focus of the camera, you can use your eyes to make selections on the screen. And so we've developed this thing, and we have a program that we've been testing it, and these lovely clients of ours with Rett syndrome have been coming in and helping us test this system, but also have garnered a sort of therapeutic use because we're helping train them to use their eyes to make selections. So they can choose music, they can choose between snaps if they want to. And we do this every week for years now. We've been just helping them, and they help us. So it's a very symbiotic relationship. They help us test and debug the software and system, and we help them practice using their eyes to communicate because they don't speak. They don't gesture. One of the only means that they have to communicate that's been documented is that they tend to have a very strong gaze reaction. So we harness that and have given them the opportunity to use an eye tracking system that doesn't require them to follow a calibration. So that's the technology that we've developed and the program that we are undertaking with them every week to remind you.
And actually, I should say there are other applications beyond users with Rett syndrome. we have a device now for a very small child with a spinal muscular atrophy. She is unable to move. So the only movement she has is her eyes. So she can actually use the eye tracker to look at an icon with, let's say, a picture of a horse in there, or a picture of the dog will bark. So she's learning through this eye tracking system. So that's a very satisfying project too. I'm going to talk very briefly about another project that has been really incredibly satisfying, and at the same time illustrates how something that starts with an individual can go out and affect actually many thousands, maybe hundreds of thousands. This lady, Marion, is in a care facility down in Tennessee. Her daughter came to us and said, I want to be able to communicate with my mother on a regular basis. They take her phone away. Because they take her phone away because she was dialing 911 sometimes. And she'd lost, because she has early stage of dementia, she lost the ability to use a phone. She couldn't use a computer. So what could she do? But her daughter and other children wanted to have contact with her on a regular basis. The reassurance that they could talk to her every night, see her every night. So they came to us and said, could you help? So we developed a very nice, simple interface around Skype. And I'll just show a little video of how it works. And I can't take any credit for this. So essentially, you see a picture and you just touch the screen. And I apologize for the cheesy conversation.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good.
I'm just sitting out here on the porch.
Yeah.
I'm just hanging out here on the porch.
Drinking too many beers.
Yeah, admiring the view. That's right.
Essentially, it's a, we call it a talking picture frame. When children are online, there's a big picture. But what you have to do is touch the picture and children actually connect. And it's been beautifully to see that development. Unfortunately, her condition is deteriorating quite significantly, but she still connects with her children every day. And what they do is they play videos down through Skype through her, so she loves animals beside. They'll play that and they see her, you can sort of see that conducting along as she watches those videos. And so again, this is a technology that we think has really huge applications.
It's not a computer.
It is a computer. She's denied a phone and she can't use a computer, so we just built this interface for her. It's all embedded. When you turn on the thing, it just goes to the photographs. Absolutely, yes. And we've taken advantage of the fact that they're now very, very cheap, inexpensive touch screens. You don't necessarily have to use a touch screen. But for her, it's just a talking picture. It is, you can get out of this thing through tricks. But essentially, in terms of her use and many other users, it's just used as a communication device. If you want to use it as a computer, you can use it. But it's a very, very elegant interface that's built on top of the Skype communication device.
And is that
available? You can download it from our website. Yes. We're hoping that might be technology for us, because, again, our goal is to get as much technology into the hands of many people as cheap as possible, but we have to support our program. So when we come across some technology where we can do potential personalization, we will. This is, I'm just going to finish on this story. Some of you, I'm not sure how many of you were at the event last night. This is Josh. We performed on the trombone yesterday. I think it was a moving performance. This is a story about a technology that we developed with Josh. And he's going to speak for himself, because it's not the technology itself, it's the opportunity to be able to come concluded. So I hope this will
work. All right, so for the guys, then, if you want to perform music, say you want to do a live, it must be a multicast. What happens when Josh Yates assembles his trombone, remembering the first time he played.
Wow, well, that's always a good thing. That's always a good thing. Yes, and it's all cool.
The Belmont High student uses his best to make it through county music, and this to navigate his high school hallways.
My vision is low, it's less than 10 degrees, so I have to play television.
Which means he can't see anything from the outside of that circle he made, which means he can't see his conductor and his music at the same time.
Nice to see what I'm doing. If I'm gesturing to the group to slow down, to change something, he needs to be aware and he needs to have that peripheral vision when he's focusing on his music.
Up until today, Josh dealt with the situation with the help of an education assistant sitting next to him, copying the conductor.
Said I couldn't really talk to my students because, you know, she's not all sitting in, and she doesn't
cramp herself.
Yeah, it was.
So Josh approached the University of Victoria's Can Assist, which came up with a high-tech solution.
Every goggles I touch for they sit below these field of vision, so the goggles sit about right here, and you can see over the top of them. They have little screens inside them, and these screens have a live video feed from a camera of the conductor. How does that feel as a musician? It feels cool.
Great for music, great for looks.
That's one part of it, I said, that's fine. That's all right. Yeah, that's cool.
Great for being with his peers.
The top of the mark. See? That's, yeah. Yes.
Josh Yates, musician, is now Josh Yates, band member.
You feel like you are truly part of something great. It makes you feel great. And it's just really cool.
Thank you to Josh for sharing his story with us.
That's what it's all about. It really is. Pam, did you want to talk to them a little bit about?
Okay, so, yeah. And I want to follow the official curriculum to the students because I'm a parent with some of the actually also, I'm a teacher educator and my area of research is around identity. So hearing a topic like this and empowering people is about enabling them to compose the lives they want to live. And it is a positive celebration, and that's what we all want for all of ourselves, right? We want to be able to live the lives and do the things we want to do. And that's the huge difference that I've got because I'm older now and our son is older. And the difference in orientation of Kinesis from sort of a deficit model of let's fix you to let's help you do what you want to do. And that is absolutely a hugely different orientation and a very different one that we ever come across. So I wrote a couple of little tiny stories because I'm better with it. Matthew, my son, is not able to run and he uses a walker for balance, mostly outside, due to motor planning difficulties and other things. But he is able and he loves to ride his bike. The freedom, wheeling along with his face in the wind, and there's a smooth transition for him all the way along. So it's a wonderful thing. And he loves his bike so much that he would really love it actually to be a car. That would really make him happy, but he has every gadget known to man for this bike. He's got bells and whistles and mirrors and the bags, the saddle bags, and he's got little flicker things and he puts on the spokes to make it sound like an engine roaring. He's got his own little parking stall spot. But he wondered about having signals, you know, light signals that would flash and all that kind of thing. So we always go with him because we have the signal for him. And he's not able to navigate that much on his own forever, so we go with him. But we thought, okay, so safety-wise, this would be a very good thing if you could signal us, because we can't be together as well, just in case people aren't noticing that we're doing the signaling. So we came across, it took a little bit of searching and hunting, but we came across some sort of signal things, and we tried them on left and right, but he was falling over every time he tried to push one or the other, because he had to move his hand a little bit, even though it's not a lot, and he was not going like this or this anymore. So we came to Pan Assist, and this was the second time that they helped out, and our figured out a way to make it work so that Matthew did not have to move his hands in the signal. And now he proudly goes along on the road, and curious people, you know, and interested are pretty wow, taken with this light that has the flashes and also the back brake lights to make him go. So he, it's just a little thing. You can see from this video the inventiveness and the improvisations and the adaptations and things that go on, very complex things. This was a little thing, but it made all the difference in the world to Matthew. And that was what he really wanted. And that was what was so wonderful to have something happen. It seems so little, but it's so big. And then the other very significant thing for Matthew is that he started volunteering at Genesis just a little bit once a week, and now he actually has a little paid position. And his job is great. He loves doing the different tasks of shredding, watering plants, with all those kinds of things. But the huge thing for Matthew is the relationships he has with the other people there, all the guys. We are loved in community. And for Matthew, that's what it's all about, is the relationship. That's the intent. That's what happens. It enables him to have a safe place where he can be himself. That's, you know, dressing up as Santa Claus when it's Christmas time, or making out the postcards, or bringing in his music that is played over and over. those kinds of things. He can be himself, and he can continue to grow. It's the most significant thing to me. It's a place where he can move and grow. And it is a great cause of celebration for myself and for Matthew. But there's more than that, because when people from far away, friends and family come to visit Matthew, he gets his trolley out, and he serves tea. And the old little teacups handed down. The spoons that he's collected over the years, and specialty from Silk Road. But then the special thing is that he brings out a photograph book, because he's not able to communicate all that well. And he shows people pictures about what he does. Because this is important. This is his life. This is my life. This is what I do. And of course, the pictures from Genesis come out, and the pictures of Matthew with his bike. Because this is his life, and he's composing. And so he is in charge of the celebration.
That's lovely. I was looking for a photo of Matthew on my own computer, but what I want to say is, it's not just what we give to Matthew to have his friends. And I think to speak for all of us, we love Matthew. I mean, he adds humor, joy, and passion. And he gives as much to us as we give to him. Which I think we love.
Wednesdays are the best. He's so funny. We just love him. We just adore him.
It's his attitude. He has just the best attitude ever. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you look at people like Matthew and their attitudes, and you think, well, first of all, you feel empowered in doing your job at Genesis, but then you just, like Nigel said about grumbling about mowing the lawn, like, just that stuff just goes away. Your attitude becomes better by hanging out with these people. We really do get one.
And I think, as I said last night, we're inspired. We're really inspired by the people who can do that. They do have significant challenges, and we don't like to dwell on the challenges or the disabilities. We like to dwell on how they inspire us and what they do achieve. And so it is appropriate, as someone said, to celebrate these incredible accomplishments in the light of some very significant. So that took me a while, finishes the sort of formal part. We'd love to have questions and discussions. So, you know, can we have that? So, are there any questions? Oh, yes?
Sorry, you briefly mentioned the application for accessibility program, but you didn't really touch on Genesis. Is it on your website, or is there some significant process that's in this?
There is, I mean, in the sense it's simple. But it is important to sort of go through a process for the liability issues and responsibility issues. So basically people, they fill out a form, you can do it on the web, on the phone. We have a full-time client coordinator who months about individual. One of the things I should say, a really critical part is that all the developers of the technology and work together as a team, it's absolutely critical that they're there, they meet the client, and they deliver the device. And again, the satisfaction that they get by working one-on-one with the client is huge. The satisfaction of being there when this device is handed over is absolutely fantastic. And that's sort of the key motivation. I don't think I've even paid Darcy, right? So there is a process, and all through the development of that technology, there's feedback to the client and the users to make sure that we're going along the right path. So,
sorry, just to expand on that. Do you often, once the client has received the product, is there follow-up? Is it a longevity where the technology itself is obviously reaching out to that client now? Are you expanding on the technology changes itself to continue to keep that person?
Absolutely. Yeah, it's great. I mean, it's one of the things we like to say is it doesn't end when you just hand over the device. Because things can go wrong, and hopefully, and usually they go really wrong, but we want to know about it. Is there any feedback? Is there changes? People's conditions change all the time. If you have a progressive disease, then your abilities might change. Or, again, if someone's recovering from a stroke, it can go the other way. So there's continual contact with the recipients of our services. So it's not a question, here's the device, good luck, and thank you. It's really critical that that connection is made, because not only is that individual going to be served now, but future clients, because we want to know how we can improve things. So absolutely, it's a partnership that will continue way beyond the delivery of the product.
I understand that you've been very comfortable and very grateful to come here. Have you been approached to work internationally? Because when I work in Africa, I see a huge, huge need for exactly the same thing.
The goal of the two sort of longer term goals, one is to establish campuses right across the country. Universities right across the country. The other goal, we've had some early discussions, is yes, we want to, we'd love to do this internationally. Talk to a few agencies, it's going to be tough to get funding, but we'd love to set up the campuses where appropriate for the environment, the resources there, whether it's in Rwanda or Tanzania or in South Africa. So we absolutely love to be able to do that. So that's certainly the long-term goal, is to affect those nice. I just got an email yesterday from a young student in UBC, she belongs to Engineers Without Borders, it's an agency that works overseas, she would love to get involved in this sort of overseas development, and she has that somewhere in Africa. So absolutely, I know that in 5 years' time, when we have a similar dialogue, we'll be talking about our partner in Rwanda, whoever it is, we'll definitely want to do that. So I was talking to you about that, how we move that process along.
At what point would you be thinking about creating a therapeutic
plan? Yes. Absolutely. The concept is called Plan Grow. And the idea is to have this facility where essentially you have a fully accessible garden, and you engage perhaps the community members to provide some guidance and support, and then you provide gardens for people with special needs to have customized gardens so you can have full physical accessibility and full accessibility and grow produce and sell that produce and actually even spin off businesses for that. You've got to get the funding in place for that. So that's one of the key things. Our resources are kind of stretched because we probably have 1,000 ideas a day. But Can Grow is definitely something that would be, that would be there in 5 years' time. Absolutely. But if there are any more, is there anything else that anyone here would like to say in terms of their experience or?
I think, yeah, what I was thinking about this
Okay, well, thank you all for coming. And, you know, if you want any more information, always visit our website or come and visit us on our eHub or any hub, and we'd love to have you visit. So thank you very much.